Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's more than just a skinny human, thank you very much, it's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and these are not the spiders he was researching with your mom in the Amazon. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a callback. Oh boy.
And each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And on our minds this week, of course, it's Dune Part 2. We're going to be reviewing Dune Part 2 as well as Spaceman, the new Adam Sandler movie on Netflix. We'll be talking about both of those movies. Best Ever Challenge will be Best Ever Planet title movies. In other words, movies that have a planet in the title. So that'll be fun to go over. And of course, we'll do some buried treasure at the end. Before we get to any of that, a reminder, last reminder, I think you're going to get before the show happens to get your picks in for the Spossgers. This is it. Do not wait any longer. Go to sifpop.com, click on Spossgers, make your picks, and then tune in live during the broadcast to see who is going to win this year and have the most picks correct. Andrew is pointing to himself. He may well be correct. It does seem like it's his year to win. So, go check that out. Go do that. Again, that's at sifpop.com. Just click where it says Spossgers, and it should take you to where you need to go. And that's what we're doing next week. If you listen to this just in the podcast feed, like you don't watch the live video, or anything like that, you're going to have a blank week in your slate because we will have Spossgers next week. And so the big Spossgers broadcast, the live video broadcast, will count as your podcast next week. We had thought early on about possibly releasing that audio as the podcast for that week, but it would be a lot of nonsense unless you were watching the video to go along with
it. So much dead air.
Yes. It would be like listening to a commentary track without a movie, you know, playing in the background. Yeah. So, we'll keep it on the video side, but we appreciate you checking it out. And if you don't, we'll see you in a couple weeks. But we got some stuff to talk about this week, Andrew. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Dune Part 2.
You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades. My family's been fighting them for centuries.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. Here, we're equal. What we do for the benefit of all.
Well, I'd very much like to be equal to you.
Maybe I'll show you the way.
Follow the mythic journey of Paul Atreides as he unites with Shani and the Fremen while on a path of revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the known universe, Paul endeavors to prevent a terrible future only he can foresee. Welcome to episode 2 of Dune the TV series. It's weird that it's taking this long to get to each episode. But what did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Really liked it. Close to loving it.
All right. High side of liked it. Close to loving it. I loved it. I loved it. I am half tempted to just say, go listen to the Dune Part 1. You know, review and kind of rinse and repeat because it's really just, it is the second half of that movie. And It is as good as that movie. It's as visually stunning as that movie. It has all of the same world building stuff that I loved from that first movie, where it's like you can tell there's some real care taken with getting the details right and not so much care with, you know, is it marketable? Is it going to work for an audience? Like, it's just like, no, this is the material. We're doing the material, Dunin, the material, and it's going to, you know, be what it is. And what it is Denis Villeneuve making amazing art and some of the most spectacular stuff I've seen in a movie theater in a long time. Just watching this was a real treat. I'm excited to get a 4K of this at home and really just soak in it because it is that kind of movie. It's just that big, you know, bombastic, can't wait to see the next scene kind of film. And and that's, you know, one of the main reasons I love it so much. Andrew, talk a little bit about your experience with it.
This is going to sound like high praise real quick, but this movie reminds me a lot of Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, in a sense, because it feels like when it came... Can we talk about the ending of this movie and what it sets up?
Well, I was going to get there eventually because in many ways I have the same issues with this movie that I had with the first one, which is it feels like we're still in the TV show and there's still too much unresolved for me to feel like it's a complete story. So it's really interesting because the first time I was like, how could you not... You know, tell me that this was a two-parter. And I think maybe I'm finding out the answer to that question is because it's a however many parter we want to do. Because
they don't know how many parts there's going to be.
Because it's a TV show. And we're just making them as we can make them. And if people keep seeing them, we'll keep making them. And, you know, it's almost a new form of entertainment, you know? Because, like, when they did Lord of the Rings, I mean, it's similar to the idea of Lord of the Rings, but they made all those at the same time. Exactly. So they knew where the end was. They knew where the big moment of catharsis and resolution and all that would be. In fact, they had several endings that they got in there because they knew what the end was. You know, it's like somewhere in the balance between Return of the King's 20 endings and Dune's zero endings now with two movies. there might be a good balance. But I don't have we ever seen this style of franchise movie making before? Like it's purposefully serial. Like it's wild.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. The reason why I brought up the Lord of the Rings reference was if you remember in Fellowship of the Ring and Return of the King, it was a lot of, you know, the beginnings of the story or the end of the story. Whereas Two Towers, there's just, if it's a sandwich, it's all the meat. All the meat is in that second movie. And it kind of feels like this is the Two Towers of however long this Dune saga is going to progress in the future.
Right.
If they do continue to progress, I feel like this movie here was the meat of the sandwich. There's a lot going on here. They did everything setting up. Now all we need is the conclusion of everything.
From your lips to Denis' ears, but like I just don't trust that there will ever be a Dune movie with an ending. It'll just be one day they'll be like, I guess we don't have enough money to do the next one, and we'll all just be going, okay.
Well, I don't know how many Frank Herbert wrote, like books he wrote, but I know that there are roughly 16 Dune books.
Yeah.
So we're not starved for content.
No.
And maybe that's my biggest pro for this movie is there's so much content that Denis is able to pull from that the world building in these movies is second to none. It really is phenomenal. There's so much lore that you can delve into and stuff that piques your interest. And nothing is, I should say, confusing while watching the movie. To an extent, but what the movie does is if you aren't sure about something, it's not like you're confused. You just want to know more. You're like, ooh, I want to research more about the Harkonnens, or I want to research more about House Atreides or the Fremen, you know. There's so much that you can learn about, and it just it's a buffet that keeps on giving is really what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the reason that I still maintain a little bit of frustration with the serialized format is that I'm still, because I'm not familiar with the content it's based on, the, mm-hmm. you know, the original content. So for me, I'm still waiting to have really crucial answers to some things that will help me determine what I believe the themes and the messages of this story is. Because right now, if it ended right now, I got some questions. I got some real questions about what this is saying. So like there are some things that need to be resolved thematically for me to even feel like I'm on board with what's going on here. You know, it is at this point, I think it's safe to say this is a like outsider colonizer savior kind of movie. Like the colonizer is the savior. Like there's, you know, the Messiah is the, you know, the guy who came in and took the land, right? Like it's a really weird thing to say. Now, I think we're going to some better places eventually, possibly. I don't know, but that's what I'm saying. So it's hard for me to talk about those kind of things that I enjoy talking about. Like the some of the main reasons I love movies is to think about, well, what is it saying to me? How does that impact me? Do I agree with that? How does that change how I see the world? Is there a conundrum here? What would I do? Like, I love those little thought puzzles that movies can give us, but when they're incomplete like this, it feels more like, okay, I'm more just watching art, which is fine. It's great art to watch. Believe me, I have loved both of these movies, the experience of watching them, and the story that is being told to me. But at some point, I want a story to have been told to me. And I anxiously await that day. So, yeah.
Because even the Lord of the Rings, and I'm sorry to keep hearkening back to that, but those movies ended each, and I don't mean like overall ended, I mean each movie had a conclusion. It didn't just stop. And mm-hmm. these movies just stop. They really do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the first one more than this one. This one has a more typical plot rise and fall to it. You know, like there is a climax to this movie, and it falls at the place that a climax normally would fall in a movie towards the end. And it feels like a more of a normal structure to me than the first one. It's just that there's enough unresolved that what we have resolved there doesn't really feel like a resolution. So yeah, I'm kind of talking around spoilers, but yeah, I think the second one feels more complete than the first one in that way.
I'll agree with that, even though I do like the first one more than this one.
Yeah. I continue to think when I watch these movies that I am ashamed that I didn't realize Star Wars was just a Dune ripoff. Like it's like you watch these movies and I'm just like, that's exactly what George Lucas did in Star Wars. He just read these books and he just took all the ideas and just kind of scrambled them up a little bit. And it's wild to me, especially on the Vader front, how much Vader is, you know, an idea of this movie and some of the plot reveals in this movie and how they are basically the plot reveals in Star Wars. It's fine. Look, we all have stuff that influences us, and then we create things that are based on those influences. But man, is Star Wars very Dune. It's a very Dune-y world.
But it's interesting because it's one of those things where people like you and I, we came to Star Wars first before we came to Dune.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so for sure. Yeah.
Whenever we see Dune, we pick up on, so we have to take Star Wars with a grain of salt because this is the original content. So anything that we see in Dune, we have to also remember they did it first, even though the movies came out afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. We haven't talked about any of the performances. And again, a lot of that is because it could kind of be cut and paste from, you know, conversations we've had before. Mm. However, I think the character evolution of Paul Atreides is more evident in the second movie. And some of the things that Timothy Chalamet is asked to do towards the end of this movie, I think stretch him a little bit. And I think he rises to the occasion. I think he manages to embody a presence that I didn't know he had in him, and in the ability to do. And there's a big speech scene that he has in this movie that it kind of floored me. I was like, wow, go Timothy.
Didn't know you had it in you.
That's really impressive. Way to go. So I continue to be impressed by Timothy Chalamet. You know, having seen Wonka in this most closely back to back, I just like, Chalamet's got some range, man. Chalamet could be around for a while if he has that kind of range and the ability to kind of, you know, do more than just the typical, oh, this is my thing. We could be looking at a real actor's actor, you know, somebody that kind of develops like a Brad Pitt type career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's more than proven himself, and he proves himself again. And I'm going to echo what you said during that big speech that he gives. That is the kind of speech or the performance you give if you are trying to portray a king or a messiah prophetic character, you know, something that will, you know, rouse the masses and stuff like that. And I believed it, and it has to be believable. That's the thing. And he's not, I'm not body shaming him in any way, shape, or form, but he's not the biggest guy. He doesn't physically have the biggest presence, but in that scene, he was able to bring his voice and blend power to his voice. And that's where you get that sense of leadership from him is, and his eyes too. His eyes really portray that.
I also want to give special mention to Javier Bardem, right? Is that who's in this? Because in many ways, this is a very stoic, serious story. Like, there's not a lot of levity, but Javier Bardem brings almost the levity to this movie through the way his character is interacting with the idea of Atreides being the Messiah. And some of that follow the Messiah stuff is so funny on some levels, and yet makes sense within the story. And so I wanted to bring attention to him, because that's not an easy balancing act to pull off.
It could have very easily made that character a joke, but it didn't. Walking around spoilers, but there's the scene where, you know, Paul is like, I'm not the Messiah. Mm-hmm. Well, you have Javier Bardem over there going, oh, he's the Messiah. He's the Messiah. And it's really great to see that they did add tiny bits of levity into this one, because what's his face? Aquaman, help me out here.
Oh, Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa is not in this one because he died in the last one. He was the one who brought the levity in that first film.
Right.
And I think that Javier Bardem picks up the mantle really well on this.
Any performances you want to single out for any reason, positive or negative?
Yeah, let's talk about Austin Butler, because I am mixed on that performance. Parts of it I like, parts of it I don't. His voice, I think it's kind of doing an imitation of Stellan Skarsgård as opposed to, you know, being his own voice. But
I thought that a few times too. It felt like an impersonation at times. And and I get that, you know, there's a purpose to that. I mean, it's, you know, whether we like it or not, most of us do sound a little bit like our fathers, you know, at least if we spend a lot of time with them growing up. So like I get what he's doing, but yet it almost feels like an impersonation, not a natural progression of how that voice would sound in your own voice.
But as far as his mannerisms, his presence, the way he carries himself, all of that, really, really good. It was just the voice that was throwing me off a little bit. People that I wanted to see more and have more screen time, Florence Pugh, Christopher Walken, they were brought up in this movie as plot points. as opposed to actual characters, I felt.
Yeah, they kind of embody the thing that Zendaya was in the first one.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, your name's on the poster, but you're not really in this movie.
Zendaya's really in this one, though.
She's really in this one, though. That is right.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's going to happen with Walken and Pugh in the third and fifth and sixth and ninth and 15th movie that they make, you know. Everybody's going to get their screen time eventually.
Oh, man.
Did you have any negatives for this one?
Man, like I said, a lot of it is going to boil down to I prefer self-contained stories, and this is not a self-contained story. It depends on both the movie before it, and it's going to depend on the movie after it. And that's almost in many ways worse than the first one, because the first one just depends on the movie after it. It has a beginning. This movie doesn't have a beginning or an end. So, you know, it's one of those kind of things where that's always going to annoy me. But other than that, I think Austin Butler for me was probably the weakest link. But it was fine, and I believed that character. Yeah. It never took me out of the movie in any way like that. Andrew, honestly, it's hard to pick out any other technical area of this movie for me that I would consider a negative. Every other part of this movie and the last one blows me away. The score is incredible. The sound design is phenomenal in both of these movies. When this movie starts,
the visuals.
And the visuals are too, but I just to kind of linger on the sound design just a little bit. When this movie started up and started to get into it, and I started hearing some of the ambient noise and the background noise and the noises of the machines and the different, I was like, oh man, I remember this. The sound of this world is distinct and interesting and big, and it is a reason to have home theater sound for movies like this. Like, it's just, it's wild how good it is in a movie theater to hear this stuff. So, so every technical aspect, I look at this movie and I'm just like, this is cinema. This is what movies were made for. This is, you know, this is what I love. One of the things I love about this. So, no, I don't really have any negatives other than the ones I've already kind of mentioned. What about you?
Basically, my biggest negative is echoing which a negative I had from the first one is that this movie just doesn't end.
Yeah, but exactly.
It does bring up a point that I wanted to ask you, and I'll answer this first off. The question is, I remember whenever the original Dune came out, we said it's not a full movie, so we can't really say whether we liked it, love it, dislike it, or hate it. Just okay. Now that this one is out, can you give a definitive on the original one?
No, I was hoping. This is what I'm saying. I was hoping.
So still.
My hope was after the first one that it was part one of two, and that we would get through two, and I'd be able to go, okay, much like Lord of the Rings, which I see as one movie split into three parts, I would see Dune as one movie split into two parts. And no, I still can't do that. It does not have an ending yet. And that's, you know, worth mentioning and worth understanding that apparently that's not what they want to do. So, and yes, I know every movie has an ending because you have to leave the theater. I just mean like on an emotional, psychological, you know, story level, this movie does not end.
Totally.
So no, I cannot look at Dune's one and Dune's twos and go, okay, here's my, you know, thought on this movie. The best I can do is what I would do with an episode of television and just go, here's my thought on this episode, you know, and here's how I feel, you know, and rank the franchise or the series differently than the individual parts. And I won't be able to rank the franchise or series until it ends, apparently. So, you know, best I can do is rank and rate the episodes. And episode two was amazing. I loved it.
Yeah, I like that. That's a really good way of breaking it down. Serialized.
It really is. And again, that's what's helped me understand, I think, the mindset behind what they're doing and to make a little bit of peace with it and just go, just, you know, watch the episodes when they come out. But it really does stink to have to wait 2 years for a next episode of a TV show you love. You know what I mean? Like, that's
totally
that's a long time to wait. So, yeah, you know, yes, I can say I loved it as an episode of Dune. But I don't know for sure if I love Dune as a franchise until I've seen the whole story.
Yeah, so. I get that. Second episode in the first season.
That's right. Any final things? Any other stuff that you want to mention or talk about?
No post-credit scene, but I want to go back.
Yes. Yeah. That's why it's so frustrating, right? Like, it's like, you know,
is that frustration good though? Is that frustration good?
No, it is so.
It's good in a sense that we want more.
Of course. Of course. I think we have known for a long time, we've talked about it on this show for a long time, that the lines between television and movies are blurring. The idea of what is serialized and what is storytelling have just changed. You know, Sam Mendes is doing that Beatles thing where he's doing four different Beatles movies from the perspective of each of the Beatles, and they are all coming out the same year, but they're four different movies telling an interconnected story. That's a TV series, right? Like that is, but because it's Sam Mendes and because it's going to theaters, it's four movies. And that's just a semantic distinction. That's all that is. And the more I think we can start talking in terms of self-contained stories and serialized content, I think the better off we're going to be with a lot of this stuff. And there is still a difference between serialized content and sequels. Sequels don't have to be serialized content. They can be standalone, complete stories. And most of them for the history of movies have been. But that is changing. And the natural frustration that comes along with that, from change, just because that's not, you know, what we're used to, is understandable. But I just think it's a matter of semantics and perception. And, you know, for somebody like me who likes complete stories, I just have to be able to put that into a category and go, that's not what this is. That's okay. Take it for it on its own terms for what it is. You know, and that's just how it's going to be. And that's fine. That's fine. Everything's okay. As long as it doesn't all turn into that, right? Because if you have a fear or a worry, that I think would be what it is that because of the idea that everybody is looking for cash cows, this idea of, oh, if we find a franchise that works, we can milk it and we can make more and more and more and more of them, MCU, Marvel, Star Wars, whatever, then it can choke out the idea of here's a 90-minute amazing thing that I want to give you. You know what I mean? Because those don't get funded, because the only things that get funded are things that are like, oh, can you make seven of these? And that's a little bit of a risk to storytelling, in my opinion. So, but I don't think we're there yet, but it's a lot of it's about economics, you know, and the money, the movie that made the most money last year was a nice, beautiful, self-contained 90-minute story. It was Barbie. You know what I mean? And are they going to try to make another Barbie movie? You bet they are, because that made a ton of money. But they didn't go into it going, oh, here is the plan for a 7-movie Barbie story that's told over 7 movies. And you know what I mean? So it's just like, you know, the money doesn't always follow the franchise. It just doesn't always work that way. But I'm a little bit passionate about it just because I think, you know, marketers and movie purveyors should be a little more honest about what they're doing. Especially with Dune coming out and not even knowing it was a part one until it popped up on the screen, watching it for the first time. Like, you know, it's one of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So that's my one last thing.
I love it. No post-credit scenes.
All right. So that is Dune Part 2. And as much as, I am befuddled by what has gone on with, you know, the storytelling in this. I mean, it's great filmmaking. Some of the best I've ever seen. It's really, really good stuff. So be sure and check it out. All right, let's move on to our second review for today. Another space story. We're going with Spaceman, which is on Netflix. Spaceman is available on Netflix. So let's talk about Spaceman.
6 months in isolation. You stop thinking too much.
I'm getting an appearance. I did not intend to frighten you, skinny human. Do not be afraid.
I'm losing my mind.
You wish to know if I am real. I am like you, an explorer.
During a research mission, an astronaut discovers that his marriage is in trouble. Luckily, he has the help of a mysterious creature hidden in his ship. Gung, gung, gung. All right, Andrew, what did you think about Spaceman? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Did not like it.
Oh, interesting. Did not like it. I think I'm going to go high side of just okay. I don't love it. I don't think I like it. But I think it's okay. And I think there's some things to pull out of it that I find really, really interesting. And it's the kind of movie I'm glad Sandler is doing for one. And I guess I'll start there since I liked it more than you. I'm really glad Adam Sandler is picking projects like this occasionally, and that he's not just landing in the Get My Friends Together in Hawaii and crack a bunch of jokes and fall over a few times. Like he's actually picking projects that have a little bit of philosophical oomph to them, a little bit of at least trying to do something interesting. It's at least a good choice to continue to take a shot with movies like this. Clearly you didn't like it. Clearly I didn't love it. It's got its issues. It's got its problems. I think it's a little too thinky for its own good. I think it kind of gets bogged down, and belabored a little bit in the philosophy that it's trying to do. But you know, you've got Carey Mulligan, who's, you know, always good in something. You've got Paul Dano, I think, doing a really interesting voice performance here. I think there's enough here that I come away going, okay, I see what you're trying to do, and I can see it kind of working. What about you? What are some of your thoughts?
Yeah, Adam Sandler, I'm going to echo what you said. I'm really glad that he's picking projects like this, because if you look at movies like this or Punch Drunk Love or Uncut Gems, anything that where he's doing a serious role, he has this ability that I don't think a lot of people really appreciate. He is a dramatic actor. Mm-hmm. He can really pull it off. And yeah. I think that he does a good job in this of making me believe that this is a wayward man who pushes people away. And I think that that's what the biggest metaphor for this movie is, mm-hmm. is it's keeping people at arm's length. And the metaphor being him being in space, he's isolated, so he's as far away from people as he possibly can be, yet he's still not satisfied with being alone.
Yeah.
So many things go on with this man. And yeah, I agree Paul Dano is giving a really good voice performance in this, but I think that the metaphor in this movie is kind of where it falls flat a little bit for me, because I think the movie is trying so hard to, and by the way, I just saw this movie at noon. So,
well, it just came out today. The day we're reviewing this, like we both just saw this today because it just came out this morning. So yeah.
Yeah. But it is one of those movies that I would have appreciated to sit down and have a little think about for a while beforehand, before going into the review, because I don't think it's one of those movies where you can watch it and then immediately come in and expect to have everything understood. I think that there's a lot going on here that over the week I'm going to go, oh, so that's what they were trying to do. But for now, it's just, I'm still going with, I didn't like it.
Yeah. I think I don't know that we need to, did you see any, trailers or anything before you watch this? Like, did you know anything about this movie going into it?
Yeah,
okay. I did not. So the mysterious creature guest was an absolute shock to me. But the mysterious creature guest is in the trailers, so I'm not going to tiptoe around on my eight legs about the mysterious creature guest. It's a spider, and it's a space
not
spider.
Not just any spider.
Yeah, it's a space spider of some sort, which adds this level of dread and creepiness to this movie that I think really kind of gets at what this movie is trying to do. This is a movie about those parts of us that experience dread and creepy things, you know, loneliness, anxiety, worry. Like, you know, the spider is a representation for any of those things that crawl into our psyche and have an impact on us. And at the same time, what's interesting about this movie, and the reason I come out going, hey, so it's okay, is because the spider is also this philosophical guide. Like, they have these deep philosophical conversations about what loneliness is and what the people in his life mean to him. And it's an interesting idea that those kind of emotions serve a positive purpose in our life, not unlike the message of Inside Out in many ways, that, you know, emotions that we see as things we don't want, if we find a way to make peace with them and interact with them and listen to what they're telling us, we can actually grow. We can actually change from the things that we learn from these spiders in our psyche. That's really interesting to me. I think that's kind of cool. And I think if you take the movie just on a story level and take it for, you know, on face value for what's going on here, that's also a little bit of an interesting world building story. You know, this idea of, you know, this space journey to find out what this nebula that was approaching, you know, Earth is. And, you know, there's some very interstellar elements to, you know, what they're discovering about space and travel and those kind of things. So, yeah, there's enough good going on here that I come away from it going, I'm glad you took the swing. Even though not everything works, like I'm really glad that you took a swing at this. What are some of your other thoughts?
Well, you're right. Everything does not work in this movie. And I think the biggest thing is I think the movie tries to put the metaphor ahead of the actual story being told.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And I agree.
And I think that is to the movie's detriment for me. That's why I don't like it, is because you have to have... I understand a movie that wants to have a metaphorical meaning behind it and it wants to lean on that, mm-hmm. but it can't lean so far on it that if you take that out, then it just falls over. And I think that's what happens here.
Yeah.
If you kick the metaphorical leg out from underneath it, it's going to topple over, because there's nothing, or I shouldn't say nothing. That's too strong a word. There's not much here story-wise, like face value story-wise. You have a man in space who pushes people away, who finds a giant spider, and they go and discover, or they go check out a nebula in space. That's not an interesting story. There has to be something there.
I mean, they go into a little bit of the spot, like the spider tells a little bit of his story, but the spider's job in this movie is not the exposition of its own story. The spider's job is the exposition of the Sandler character's story. That's who the movie wants us to care about. And so much of the spider's job is to dig into that, not necessarily its own background in those kind of things. But those details are in the movie. Like, he does talk about, you know, what happened to his world and, you know, who they are and that kind of thing.
Yeah, a little bit, but I'm talking more along the lines of, man, I don't even know what I'm talking about with this movie. let's say this. Let's say that there's a part in the movie, and this isn't spoilerish, where the spider who is, I forget his name, Hanush, I think it was.
Adam names him. He doesn't have a name, but Adam names him, yeah, Hanush or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But where he's asking Adam Sandler's character, like, you push people away and it fills you with sorrow. do these feelings give you sustenance? And I'm butchering what he says.
Sure.
But it's along the lines of like, you're pushing people away intentionally. Does this make you feel happy? Does it give you sustenance?
Right.
Why are you doing this? And obviously the metaphor is that Hanush is Adam Sandler's inner conscience. You know, he's telling him all the things that he needs to hear himself. And that was the one moment of the movie, like, ooh, I want more of that. Where you pinpoint at what is making this Adam Sandler character tick, and what is what are his fallacies, and can we conquer them before it's too late, before Carey Mulligan decides to do her thing.
And this is probably my main negative with the movie, is that I think it wants us to care about the Jacob-Lenka romance. And I don't think it does a very good job at giving us a reason to care about their romance. It gives us a little bit of backstory. It gives us a couple scenes of them having fun together. But there isn't that deep connective thing that it's going for. Unless I missed it, there isn't some sort of thread that you tug on and go, oh, I feel the pain of their separation and I want them, you know, to come back together. Now, I do, just because I love, and I love the idea of reconciliation and commitment and people finding each other again. But I had that before I went into the movie. The movie didn't give me that. And the movie doesn't, I don't think the movie does a good job of giving me any of that, to where it gives me meaningful reasons to be rooting for them to come together, which I think is the point of the movie. I think the movie, at least based on the way it ends, is, you know, trying to make their relationship the central driver of the narrative. And it just, it didn't, that part didn't work for me. And I think that's a big negative.
Yeah, I think the movie would have been better served if the whole purpose wasn't specifically about them and it was about humanity as a whole, humanity's inability to accept love sometimes, or to push people away inadvertently. And another issue with the love story is all these supporting characters, their motives for trying to get them back together aren't wholly, you know, in the service of love.
Yeah.
You know,
they have ulterior motives for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the only reason why they're doing it. And if they would have found a way to help Carey Mulligan's character realize what he's going through, or try to, what's the word, when you try and talk to somebody to convince them of something, it's
I'm not sure what word you're looking for.
Words are hard sometimes. Manipulate? Aaron, I just want you to manipulate. It could be used. Yeah. Coerce. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To coerce her into doing these things. And it's just not, it doesn't make for good storytelling.
I agree. I think there's a lot of possibility in this movie. I think, unfortunately, most of it is unrealized. And I think that's kind of where I land. And that's probably as much as I have to say about that. Do you have anything else? Anything else you want to say about Spaceman?
A post-credit scene?
No. I have one more pro. I guess I do have one last thing. This is a complete story told within one movie.
Take that, Denis Villeneuve.
That's right. The one area Spaceman is better than Dune Part 2. All right, that is Spaceman. It is available on Netflix, so you can check that out if anything we said makes it sound interesting to you. Before we head into the best ever challenge today, just a reminder that we're able to keep doing this, keep doing the fun stuff on the website because of people who support at Patreon. We appreciate you listening. That's good enough. We appreciate you telling your friends about the podcast. That's more than good enough. But if you go to patreon.com and you're like, you know what, here's $3 every month, that just blows our minds. And we thank you for that so, so much. As a thank you gift, we record extra content for you that pops up in your own personalized podcast feed. Again, if you want to check it out, go to patreon.com/siftpop, S-I-F-T-P-O-P, patreon.com/siftpop. Thank you for doing so.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
All right, best ever challenge, best ever planet title movies. This is one of those categories, unless I missed a ton, that were the really just a few of them, Andrew, yeah. Just a few of them.
I have one movie that I can recommend. The rest of them I just have on a list. I'll just say that.
I have on my top five, I have one cheat, and it's a major cheat, and I don't care. I'm going to use it anyway because it's a thin category. And of the five, I think I, including the one that's a cheat, I think I really like four of them. I really like four of them. One of them I kind of love. So, hey, there's that. Nice. But my number five will just be in the category of, hey, I saw this movie and I didn't hate it. So let's start there. Oh, by the way, if you have anything higher, which happens, it tends to happen when we've got these short lists, it will be
Trump.
It will be trumped so that we can talk about it with whoever has it highest. I'll kick us off with my number five, the movie I saw that I was like, well, that's not totally terrible. I'm going with Journey to the Center of the Earth. This is kind of a fun movie and has Earth in the title, so it's going to be on my list. I like Brendan Fraser. I'm glad he's having a little bit of comeback, and of course with the Academy Award he won last year. But this was kind of at the real tail end of kind of the work he was doing, and but it's kind of fun, and of course it's got also a young Josh Hutcherson in there too, who's now also kind of showing up in a lot of stuff, so it's kind of fun to go back and watch these movies and have a good time with them. But there's some fun stuff in here. The effects, you know, they haven't aged spectacularly, but they're, you know, but what do you expect? So yeah, this is a movie.
And it's a better movie than my number five, I'll say that.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, then why didn't you trump it? It should have been higher on your list.
Should have, because I haven't seen it. But I already know that it's a better movie than this.
There you go.
What is your number five?
What is your number five?
It's After Earth.
Okay, so you know what's really interesting? You mentioned After Earth, and of course this came up when I was doing my research for this category, and there's no way I was putting it on my list. I would rather cheat than put this movie on my list. But one thing I noticed, putting a planet name in your title, kind of a jinx, kind of a curse. There are so many really bad movies that have planet. Now, I won't name any more of them in case you went ahead and put them on your list. But but there are some really bad movies, including After Earth, that have a planet in the title. So do you want to talk a little bit about your love for planet Earth or After Earth?
I really do not. Okay, so this is all that I'll say. I have not seen Avatar: The Last Airbender, Shyamalan's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is what I consider to be his worst movie.
Yeah, it's definitely his second worst movie. World building, there's a little bit, there's some interesting world building in this movie, but no, this is a pretty bad movie.
None of it makes sense.
No, none of it makes sense. You're right. All right, let's go on to our number fours. My number four is my cheat. Complete cheat, total cheat, 100% a cheat. You don't have to call me on it. I know I'm cheating. At number four, I put John Carter, parentheses should have been called Of Mars. Though it's not. Mars is not in the title. It should be. John Carter of Mars should be the title of this movie. And I enjoy this movie.
Make this my number five.
Yes.
Make this my number five, because I like this movie too.
I really do like this movie. And I was kind of sad that it caught all the hate it did, because I think it's really, really interesting. So, yeah. And I had a fun time with it. So John Carter should have been Of Mars is my number four with an asterisk. All right. What is your number four, Andrew?
I'm going to go with Mission to Mars. Not a good movie.
I couldn't remember if I'd seen it, so I didn't put it on my list.
I mean, it has a lot going for it. It really does. It's a Brian De Palma film.
Yeah, it's a De Palma, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Tim Robbins, Gary Sinise, Don Cheadle, and Connie Nielsen. I mean, yeah. And it's a space movie, but there's really nothing much here. It's about when the first manned mission to Mars meets a catastrophic and mysterious disaster after reporting an unidentified structure on the planet's surface. Yeah. And I remember watching the ending to this movie going, oh, that's it.
Mm.
And without spoiling, yeah, this yeah. terrible movie.
I will eventually see it. I have all of De Palma's movies on my watch list, so I will eventually get to this. But good to know you love it so much. Good to know it's, yeah. it's good enough to be on a top five list. All right.
That's the end of my movies that I'm like, I hate these movies. The rest of them are either good or meh, I should say, to really good.
My number three, we'll head on, is probably the one I'm most proud of. And maybe you got this one too. But it was one where I was at first like, wait, no, wait, yes. I have Spaceballs at number three. The planet is called Spaceball.
Spaceballs. You're right.
So there is a planet, a fictional planet in this movie title. So
you're smart. You're smart.
I enjoy this quite a bit. Yes, it's juvenile, but you know, it's Star Wars parody, and it's good Star Wars parody. It's fun, so, or I should say Dune parody. But no, it's Star Wars. So yeah, Spaceballs is my number three.
Comb the desert.
I always just think of the time where they're watching the movie and they catch up to where it's where it's happening. They just keep looking back.
They're just looking back at the camera.
It's amazing.
Yes.
My number three. What is your number three, Andrew?
Going all the way back to, I think, 1951, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, I had this in my honorable mentions. Yeah.
Fun little movie. Interesting premise. You know, an alien shows up in Washington, D.C. and says, hey, humanity, knock it off. Mm-hmm. That's basically what he says. Knock it off. All these wars and everything you're doing, stop it. And if you don't, here's a giant robot who's going to take you all out. And it's it's interesting. I really like it.
Kind of a precursor to Iron Giant in some ways with that giant robot.
A little bit more morbid, but yeah, totally.
Yes. Good choice. Like I said, had it in my honorable mentions. I just haven't seen it in forever. So I did not have it on my list. My number two is Solaris. I had at number two, which is the name of the planet in that movie. This is George Clooney. I think this is a Steven Soderbergh film, and is really tense and well done. I don't know that the twist works completely for me, but I really, really enjoyed the experience of watching Solaris. So there you go. That is my number two. Andrew, what is your number two?
Soderbergh.
Yeah. He makes
good movies. My number two has one of the most impressive casts of any movie ever.
Okay.
Honestly. Listen to this cast real quick.
You mean before Jack I trumpet? Nicholson.
Yeah, before you... okay, fine. It's Mars Attacks.
But let's talk about it, because it's my number one. Here's what I have to say about Mars Attacks. This has one of the most impressive casts ever put together. Let me just read this list for you. Andrew, please. In fact, why don't you do it? Why don't you read the list for me? Here, I'll send it to you.
Okay, cool. Got it. We got Jack Nicholson, Pierce Brosnan, Sarah Jessica Parker, Annette Bening, Glenn Close, Danny DeVito, Martin Short, Michael J. Fox, Robert Steger, Tom Jones. Tom Jones is in this movie?
It's not unusual.
It's not unusual to me. Natalie Portman's in this. Jack Black. Yeah. Crazy, crazy cast. And it's Christine Applegate. It's a fun movie.
It's
a really fun movie. It's a dumb movie, and it's a fun, dumb movie.
Yep. I agree. I think this movie's great. I think it's a lot of fun. So, and it knows exactly what it is. It completely understands the assignment and pulls it off. So, yeah, Mars Attacks is worth a watch. That's my number one. Your number one, Andrew?
The first Dune. Not the, what's his face?
Lynch?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, not the David Lynch one.
Okay, Denis' first Dune.
Denis' Dune. 2021's Dune.
Dune Part 1.
Dune's. Because Dune in Fremen is the name of the planet, Arrakis.
It sure is, which is, again, why we're doing the category. Yeah, I just didn't include this because we were talking about Dune today. That's the only reason. This would have also been my number one had I put it on the list. So, perfect choice.
Yeah.
Great choice. Again,
I mean, unless movie. You wanted another winner from my previous category. just truly terrible. I think my number it was Jupiter Ascending. Jupiter Ascending was my original number five.
Like, that's what I'm saying about The Curse. Like, it's just like you look at these movies and it's just like they're bombs. So bad. So yeah, there you go. The best ever planet title movies. You already covered my only honorable mention. Did you happen to reach out to the Sift Gurus on this one?
Oh, I sure did. Let's pull that up real quick. So it looks like at number three, we have Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Hey, look at that. See, it's not bad.
Yep. Then we have Melancholia. Oh, no, Mars Attacks. Mars Attacks at number two and then Dune at number one.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Skoklego in the chat mentions Mars Needs Moms. I did see that as I was looking kind of through some of those. And I just don't remember if I've seen that movie or not. So it can't be that amazing if I saw it and then forgot that I saw it. And if I haven't seen it, then I can't put it on my list. But yeah, I do remember Mars Needs Moms came up. There you go. There's the best ever challenge for movies with a planet title, with a planet in the title. All right, on to our buried treasure. What's that one thing in any area of culture that you want to make sure people know about? Andrew, kick us off.
I'm going to go with a Netflix documentary series that I just finished watching. A three-part series called Arnold. It's about Arnold Schwarzenegger. This was one of the most fascinating documentary series I'd seen in a very long time. Have you seen this by chance, Aaron?
I haven't, actually, no.
I highly recommend it. It's broken up into three segments. There's Arnold as Mr. Olympia, the bodybuilding era of mm-hmm. him. And there's the second series is the action star of him. And then the third is the politician. And what I really appreciated about this movie is how open it is. He's not kind of like... I was disappointed a little bit in the Sly documentary they did on Netflix because it was Sly doing it. So there was no, you know, bad stuff that happened in his life that he was really talking about. But here Arnold is talking about some of the bad stuff. He's like, yeah, I did steroids. Yeah, I cheated on my wife. I wasn't that great of a guy. And, you know, he's being open about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very fascinating documentary series. I personally enjoyed the Mr. Olympia video, which is the first episode, the most.
Okay.
Just basically because I didn't grow up with that. I grew up with Arnold, the action star. I grew up with Arnold, the politician. I didn't grow up with Arnold, Mr. Olympia, the body, you know?
Yeah.
So seeing that and getting to know more about him, I've always thought he is one of the most fascinating characters in history. His life story of coming from nothing to building himself up in three different, you know, professions. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
And he was a millionaire before he was 21. Just such an inspiring figure. So I highly recommend, if you haven't already, checking out Arnold on Netflix.
All right. Three-part docu on Netflix called Arnold. I'm also going with a Netflix documentary. But it's just a single movie. It's called The Greatest Night in Pop, is the name. And, this is the story of how We Are the World was recorded. And it is fascinating, just fascinating stuff. So many great stories in this. It's insane the talent that was gathered in one room. You know, I won't spoil everything, but just a few things that I learned from this doc that I loved. I never realized that the only way they made this happen is because they did it the same night as the American Music Awards. So everybody was in town for that. So after the awards, everybody just went to this other place to record, and they just spent all night recording the song together, all of them in the same room. It all happened in one like 8-hour session and in the middle of the night. Another story is they originally, Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie and Stevie Wonder were supposed to write the song together. And so, Lionel was kind of spearheading this and talked to Michael, and they were good friends. And so they, you know, and they would call and leave messages for Stevie Wonder, and he just wouldn't call him back. So they just wrote the song. So Michael and Lionel wrote We Are the World. So the day before, 2 days before the recording is supposed to happen, Stevie Wonder, you know, comes to town, and he's like, okay, so when are we writing this song? And they're like, Stevie, we already did this. We left you tons of messages, and you know, you didn't do anything.
Maybe didn't see him.
I see what you did there. So anyhow, great stories. There's a beautiful story about how Stevie Wonder helped Bob Dylan kind of find his ability to do this thing. He felt really out of place there. Didn't really understand, you know, what he was doing there, what was supposed to be going on. He's not a choral singer. He stands in front of a microphone with a guitar, and you know, like he's Bob Dylan. So just some really interesting stories, and just the footage that they have of this is incredible. And the stories are incredible. So highly, highly recommend The Greatest Night in Pop. It's a lot of fun and very, very interesting. And if you are of my age or older, or maybe even a little bit younger than me, this song was a foundational part of your growing up. It came out and was everywhere for like 2 years. It didn't matter who you were. You knew we Are the World. It was just, it dominated everything.
Well, yeah, this came out the year before I was born, but even growing up, I heard this song constantly.
There you go. There you go. So yeah, that's The Greatest Night in Pop. You can check that out on Netflix. And Arnold, you can also check out on Netflix. Well, we did it, Andrew. We did another podcast. Woo. Congratulations. Yeah, we didn't even need to breathe any spice to make it happen, man.
Spice my lounge.
Your eyes are looking a little blue, though. They are looking a little blue. Oh,
thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. Get access to a lot of fun things. There's a bonus episode that we do for a certain level. Lots of fun stuff there. We would never use the voice to make you become a Sif Pop member. We would never compel you to
be a patron.
I lied. But if you decide to, we would definitely appreciate it. Again, that is at patreon.com/SifPop. Let's see. Lots of ways to connect with the podcast. Leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can email us feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie loving friends will probably like the show too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than having to latch a new worm hook every time you need to go to the grocery store. We'll be back next week with our live Sposkers show. Woo! The live Sposkers show will be next week, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.